listening to the Daily Daily Caller podcast on iTunes and thedailycaller.com. Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 16th of July, 2018. I'm Derek Hunter. It's Monday already, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about that. It just happens. Nothing I can do. We should really go to a system of four 10-hour work days, still get your 40 hours of work in, and then every weekend would be a three-day weekend. Wouldn't that be so much better? Anyway, before we get into the news, let's congratulate France for winning this soccer tournament over in Europe. I would say, well, they only won because the United States wasn't playing, but the United States sucked, so we didn't even make the tournament. So there you go. France beat Croatia. Congratulations to the French team. They resisted the natural French urge to surrender right at the beginning of it and stuck it out for, I think it was a 4-2 win. I fell asleep during it because there was a lot of just passing the ball in the middle, although six goals scored is a pretty high total for soccer. So, of course, in typical modern fashion, I can't even ascribe it to any particular country, there were riots in France after the victory because people were so excited at a victory of a sports team that they had nothing to do with that they felt the need to riot. I have never felt this excited in my life. Maybe I'm missing something. I grew up in Detroit when the Red Wings were winning Stanley Cups. It had been almost 50 years since the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup. I was happy for the team. I didn't delude myself into thinking that I had anything to do with any of their Stanley Cup victories. My existence had no bearing on how those games went. So I did not get particularly excited. I did not go out and try and overturn police cars and climb greased light poles and set fires and everything like that. Although my friend George and I did go driving around the first time because we'd heard reports that women were so excited that they were streaking down a particular road. We didn't find them, but we looked. Anyway, congratulations to France. Keeping our attention in Europe today, this morning, the president is scheduled to meet with Vladimir Putin soon. I'm recording this at night because I'm doing a radio show in the morning, so I'm filling in, so I have to get this done. The Putin-Trump summit has yet to begin, but already the pearl clutching has begun. Democrats are outraged. The big indictments came down on Friday. Rod Rosenstein had a big press conference where he announced the new round of indictments. And I can say this about these indictments. Robert Mueller and his team are exceedingly good at indicting people who will never show up in court. The old saying, you can indict a ham sandwich, a skilled prosecutor, anybody could indict a ham sandwich, because in a grand jury, it's all one-sided. There is no defense. There is no rebuttal of any of the evidence or the testimony. There's no cross-examination. It's pretty easy to get an indictment. Robert Mueller got these indictments, about a dozen of them, against Russian intelligence officers. But weirdly, they didn't indict the Russian intelligence agency, which is weird, because if these people are working for the Russian government, theoretically, you could also indict the agency. But these 12 people who were indicted, all Russian nationals, none of them American citizens, will never show up in court. They're accused of hacking the DNC, of hacking Hillary Clinton's campaign, John Podesta's email, which, by the way, the password was password. How many out there think that John Podesta's current password is now just password and the number 2? What do you think of that? Well, they're not exactly master hackers, but whatever. The problem is, well, I guess it's not a problem for Robert Mueller because these indictments came down. You have a situation where these 12 people are in Russia. They live in Russia. They work in Russia. They allegedly did this from Russia. They will never come to the United States to face trial. That means that Robert Mueller never has to actually prove his charges, which is a pretty sweet gig if you're just trying to show the world you're doing something. Because if any of these people came to the United States and demanded a speedy trial, to which they are entitled, they would be entitled to examine the evidence against them, as any defendant in an American court is. We're not, you know, Kafka's world. The problem for Mueller, well, it's not really a problem again, because these people likely aren't going to show up. But the problem for Mueller would be the Democratic National Committee's server is missing. The FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the Mueller team have never once examined the Democratic National Committee's servers to find out who hacked. You can, there are digital footprints. There are ways to trace things back if you can get it. That's why, you know, these people are caught all the time, these morons sending threats via email or via social media. You can track that down. Everything leaves a footprint. There's a nice little trail back to wherever it was. Well, the Democratic National Committee ran around, even during the campaign, saying, we've been hacked, we've been hacked. Oh, my God, we've been hacked, and it's Russia. Well, this obviously perked up the FBI's ears, and they came around and said, we'd like to examine your servers to find out exactly who, in not only, you know, they probably just assumed, well, it must have been the Russians, to find out who in Russia, because you can pinpoint it down to specific computers if you know what you're doing, and the FBI knows what they're doing. The Democratic National Committee did not allow that to happen. They did not allow forensics experts to check out their servers. Instead, they went to a third-party contractor of the Democratic National Committee who swore up and down, they pinky swore, that it was Russians. And that was it. Then, after that, once the FBI really started wanting to sniff around, because if, you know, these allegations are true, a foreign power has hacked into the servers of a major political party, that's pretty serious stuff. All this happened under Barack Obama, by the way. The FBI said, we would like to examine your servers, and poof, they had disappeared. Now, servers aren't flash drives. These aren't things that you can stick in your pocket. These aren't little things that you can accidentally stuff in your socks, a la Sandy Berger and the classified material he stole from the Clinton administration from the National Archives. These are fairly large things. These servers had been wiped and disappeared. Again, this is like showing up allegedly, calling the police, saying, I've stumbled across a murder scene in my home. Quickly, please come here and check out this murder scene. We've got to find out what happened. And by the time the police get there, you have cleaned up. You started mopping up. You started wiping down things. Just, and your defense is, hey, I'm a neat freak. The Democratic National Committee has never had to explain why their servers are missing. They're just missing. The FBI has never searched their servers. They've never done a forensic deep dive on these servers. But apparently, based on the honor system, Robert Mueller thought that there was enough information without actually having any information firsthand to charge these 12 Russians. Now, they may be guilty as hell, and they probably are. But they would never, ever be convicted. They will never, ever be convicted because defendants in the United States have to have access to the evidence against them. So their experts can check it out and verify that the other experts were right to make sure, you know, that there's. But Robert Mueller can charge these people freely. And then the spin begins. We have charged 12 Russians. And you heard it all weekend in the media. President Trump should call off his summit with Vladimir Putin because of these allegations. There are plenty of reasons not to meet with Vladimir Putin. There are plenty of reasons to meet with Vladimir Putin. These charges that would never stand up to basic scrutiny in court is not one of them. That didn't stop anybody. Senator Kamala Harris went off. This is an outrage. We shouldn't be meeting with him. You need to get your butt home. Elizabeth Warren, same thing. Don't reward the enemy. You shouldn't meet with Vladimir Putin. So on and so forth. Chuck Schumer, all of them. All of these people know, all of the people that I named are lawyers. All of these people know that Mueller's case hinges upon evidence he doesn't have. He's only got testimony about the evidence he doesn't have. That would never in a million years stand up in court, but it will stand up to political scrutiny. It will fit nicely into campaign ads. It will possibly damage the president. It certainly damages the president on the world stage because it makes him look like he doesn't care, when in fact, they don't have a case. It's sad and pathetic. Speaking of sad and pathetic, let's turn our gaze longingly, angrily, disgustingly to the mainstream media, shall we? President Trump has been a harsh critic of the media. I don't have to tell you that. And over the weekend, John Bolton was interviewed. John Bolton, of course, National Security Advisor to President Trump, was being interviewed by Jonathan Karl of ABC News. Now, of course, the president throws around fake news. He throws around criticism toward the media constantly. The media always clutch their pearls. They say, this is an outrage. It's the same mentality. You're aiding totalitarians around the country, around the world, that are arresting and murdering journalists, and you're giving them solace, which is bogus. Jim Acosta constantly is tweeting about how third world dictators talk about the press the way President Trump talks about the press. Jim, you're walking around free. You're hammering your big fat checks from CNN. You're a jackass. That's the problem with you, Jim. You are a partisan hack. You are a CNN employee, and to get FaceTime on CNN, you kind of have to be a partisan hack these days. But they never find a reflective surface. They never do any soul searching. So Jonathan Karl was talking to John Bolton over the weekend, and he asked about this. Isn't basically comparing the president of the United States to Vladimir Putin. Let's listen.
And I want to ask you about Putin and freedom of the press. Vladimir Putin and his government have jailed journalists. There have even been accusations that there have been they've carried out murders of journalists critical of the Russian state. And we hear President Trump, doesn't he kind of contribute to that authoritarian effort to undermine a free press when we hear him brand legitimate news organizations as fake, legitimate news stories as fake? Doesn't that contribute to exactly the kind of undermining of the free press that we see out of Russia?
Don't you love that? Isn't Donald Trump exactly like Vladimir Putin, who's jailing and killing reporters because Donald Trump sends mean tweets? You can hear Jonathan Karl clutching his pearls. You can also hear John Bolton chomping at the bit. Let's hear it.
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. And let's just be clear. Franklin Roosevelt met with Joseph Stalin at a time when activity in Russia was a lot worse than it is today. I'm not excusing present conduct, but it didn't seem to bother Franklin Roosevelt, and liberal Democrats weren't bothered at the time when he met with Stalin. So let's try and have some historical perspective here and not act like we have the attention span of fruit flies.
That's not the fruit flies line I love at the end. But of course, John Bolton is absolutely right. Criticizing the press is wildly different from murdering and imprisoning journalists. And if you don't see the difference, and you don't see how one does not lead to the other, we're not jailing journalists here. If you wanted to complain about people spying on journalists here, then you'd have to go back to the Obama administration when they tapped the phones of 20 Associated Press reporters and got the phone records of James Rosen and his parents. But that didn't seem to bother all that many people, at least not for very long, during the Obama administration. Well, Jonathan Karl, being Jonathan Karl, wasn't satisfied with that. He wanted another bite at the apple because you got to fly on the press plane when you're over in Helsinki. They all sort of charter a plane together or fly on Air Force One together. He's around these people a lot. Journalism, even if you work at different networks, is a small little club, and you play poker with these people. You probably have affairs. There's probably a lot of affairs going on in the media that travel with the president. You got to deal with these people. And this is all the rage right now. The media is very upset that the media is being criticized. So Jonathan Karl wanted another bite at the apple. So he circled back to Bolton.
But wait a minute. I'm not asking whether or not it's legitimate or appropriate for him to meet with Vladimir Putin. I'm asking if the president branding real news organizations, real news stories as not real contributes to this effort that we see from the Russians and from other authoritarians to undermine a free press.
No, after I compared the two, I'm not actually comparing the two. I'm just saying that Donald Trump is to blame for some of what's going on. Yeah, because, you know, Russia was just a press-friendly place before January 20th, 2017, wasn't it? Vladimir Putin has been a monster for more than a decade. However long he's been in power, he's been that kind of monster. Totalitarians are totalitarians. They don't sit around. There's no democratically elected leader of the free world sitting around going, you know, everything. I wish I could criticize the press. I wish I could jail some journalists. I wish that I could have them murdered, but I can't. And then they see a Trump tweet where he says fake news. And he goes, oh, finally, the permission slip I have been waiting for to go on a killing spree of journalists. And by the way, is it just me or does Jonathan Carl talking about race or like journalists like it's a race or something? They're discriminating against journalists. They're doing this again. It's bigotry against journalists. It's a profession. You're adults. You should be able to handle criticism. You don't live in Russia. You don't live in a totalitarian regime as much as you would like to portray it to be, and as much as your fellow travelers with your press credentials would like to portray it as being. It is not. We are a free country. You are free to criticize the president, which you and your colleagues do regularly. And the president is free to criticize right back. That's how it works. You don't get to throw grenades and then run around and get upset and complain that somebody's throwing crab apples back at you. Well, what I said, it was perhaps a little wordier, a little harsher than what John Bolton said. But what John Bolton said was pretty damn good, too.
Of course not. I really, honestly, Jonathan, I think the question's silly.
Well, let me ask you about...
And don't say I'm attacking freedom of the press. I just characterized your question.
I love it. It's silly. And don't say I'm attacking the free press. I'm just characterizing your question. Because it was a stupid question. Journalists are being killed in Russia, and Donald Trump sends tweets. Aren't those the same thing? And isn't the tweets really empowering the execution and imprisoning of journalists, which has been happening long before Donald Trump was tweeting about the fake press? Do you see how insane it has gotten? The Trump derangement syndrome is real, ladies and gentlemen, and these people are absolutely crazy. Speaking of crazy, another thing happened over the weekend. The president sat down with CBS News. He went from ABC to CBS. Now, this is kind of funny because you hear journalists complain all the time that they don't get a chance. Why won't the president have a serious interview? Why won't he sit down? When is he going to have a press conference? He needs to have a serious press conference. The guy has nothing but press conferences. I don't know that a president has been more readily available to the media than Donald Trump, not just in person, but through Twitter. But he does sit-down interviews all the time. They may not like the questions that he's asked. He takes questions when he's going out to the helicopter, when he's coming back from an event at the White House. Constantly, they have near total access to the president, except CNN, who Donald Trump called fake news at a press conference in the UK on Friday, which I thought was funny because Jim Acosta was very upset and trying to be very rude. And of course, while Jim Acosta is yelling at the president and Theresa May trying to get his question answered and trying to interrupt other people during a press conference, the president called him fake news. But then immediately all of these reporters came rushing to the defense of Jim Acosta. He's a serious journalist. He also called a reporter for NBC News fake news or something like that, too. That got them upset as well, because everything Trump does gets them upset. And they all defended him. These are serious journalists. Jim Acosta is not a serious journalist. Jim Acosta and pretty much everybody on CNN, with maybe the exception of Jake Tapper, although I'm sure it's happened on his show, I know Jake Tapper's been critical of it, though, have called the president a Nazi, have accused the president of setting up concentration camps or internment camps on the border, have called him a racist, have called him a sexist, have called him a misogynist, a homophobe, an Islamophobe, everything under the sun. These are journalists, not just paid contributors, although they do it regularly, too. So, yes, CNN does have a bit of a problem. Can you blame the president for saying, to hell with you people, I'm not going to deal with you because you're not fair. You're not even remotely close to unbiased. So I'm not interested in talking to you. The president is under no obligation to talk to any journalists. But by the way, since this is the Daily Caller, back in the day, the Obama administration, Neil Monroe, who then worked for the Daily Caller, yelled out a question during a speech by the President of the United States where he wasn't going to take questions. And President Obama only ever took pre-selected journalists' questions. Remember, he had that list of questions at his press conferences. He'd give a 20-minute speech about how awesome he was, read from a teleprompter, and then he would give incredibly long answers. He'd get an hour-long press conference where you'd have seven questions. And that was a good one. That was a big one. All the reporters, he had the list, were looking for this person, and he'd read the next one on the list. And they were always safe journalists, always safe news outlets. Well, Neil Monroe asked a question. I believe it was about immigration, and the media collectively clutched their pearls. This is inappropriate. How can you do this? They wanted to ban him from the White House. It was an outrage. Now Jim Acosta acts much worse and regularly. Neil Monroe did it once. Jim Acosta does it daily, and he is lauded as a hero. Yet, Jonathan Carl, Jim Acosta is not in prison. Jim Acosta is still freely going about the world and doing his job as best he can, which isn't admittedly all that good, but that's not the president's fault that he sucks at his job. Notice the difference? Well, anyway, that was a tangent. In an interview with CBS News, they asked the president who he saw as our foes, as our competition. They sort of conflated the two words. And the president said, well, we got the EU, we got China, we got Russia. Everybody was flabbergasted. How can you say that the European Union are our foes? These are our brothers in arms. These are our kindred spirits. They are not. They are our competitors. And in that sense, they are our economic foes. Every country is our economic foe. Our friends are us. We don't get excited instead of moving the factory to China, they move the factory to Belgium. No, nobody gets excited. It's about losing jobs here in the country. And we want to attract jobs from everywhere around the world. They are our competitors. They are our foes. That was the context in which the president was talking. But the media heard it differently, as if there was a possibility of a gathering storm of war with Europe over there. Look, the European Union, when they banded together, they became a more serious competitor and a more serious threat to the U.S. economy. Believe me, the EU would steal every job in the United States if they could. They'd regulate the hell out of themselves, much worse than we do here, so we haven't lost to them yet. We're still losing to China. But it is delusional to think that the President of the United States views them somehow as our enemy, foe, and competitor. When those words are used, they're sort of interchangeable. He was not talking about them being our enemy. Yet that's how it was reported. And you talk about fake news. If you're going to sit there and get very upset and clutch your pearls and get your panties all wadded because the president called Europe our economic foe, our economic competition, of course they are. Every company views every one of their competitors as their foes. No matter if they're the exact same company or even close or thinking about dabbling in that industry, they come up with a strategy to try and defeat them. When it comes to economics, there are all sorts of trade barriers to getting our goods into the European Union. And even within the European Union, the whole system over there is a mess. French farmers strike constantly. There are constant strikes over there. Everybody's upset because they try and regulate the hell out of it. They're trying to be self-sustaining, which would be fine, except they can't be. They don't produce enough energy, amongst other things. But in order to do business in the European Union, they make you jump through a bunch of flaming hoops. That's part of the reason why the UK wanted out, is it was causing economic problems in addition to the immigration problems. But maybe the media isn't honest enough. Maybe they're just not intelligent enough. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they're dumb. Maybe they just heard the words and had a Pavlovian response because they came out of Trump's mouth. But it was dishonest news coverage over the weekend about the president's words. Not that that ever stood in the way of a journalist from attacking the president of the United States. See, this is the best thing Donald Trump has going for him. There are plenty of flaws in what Donald Trump does, plenty of legitimate criticisms to make. But no matter what he does, and no matter how unconventional it may seem, it is never as unhinged and crazy as liberals. Donald Trump benefits immeasurably from the lunacy of his political opponents, and he always will, because they can't control themselves. They are working strictly off of emotion and rage, and in a lot of cases, ignorance. So, yeah, you heard a lot of garbage over the weekend, a lot of lies, quite frankly, from the media, and then they immediately clutched their pearls when the president criticized the media. How dare he say that? Doesn't he know Vladimir Putin is killing journalists? Yeah, he does. Don't you guys know that that's been going on for a long time? You would think you work in the media. You might consume some of it. Anyway, that is all the time we have today. We'll be back tomorrow with another exciting edition. I am Derek Hunter. This is the Daily Daily Caller Podcast. Subscribe to it, rate and review it. Send emails to Derek@dailycaller.com. Buy my book, Outrage, Inc. Most importantly, be back here tomorrow for another exciting episode.